Hi, this is Circe Olson-Wessner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeros, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking with Elizabeth Benson. She's a military wife and a military mom, and I'm not all sure which branches her kids are in, so I'm just going to let you tell the listeners about your huge military family, Liz. Hi. Welcome.
Hi, Lizzie. Thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me to talk with you and share our story.
Well, I'm really excited. We're old friends. And yeah, so let's just get started. Talk about your family.
Okay, so our military family, well, I'll start with our role. Jim's my husband. He's retired Air Force. He's a Mustang. He started enlisted during the Vietnam era and served overseas then, and then went back to become an officer. Above him on the wall is his dad, a World War II veteran from the Army. Mm-hmm. And he was landed in Normandy and was a POW for a brief period of time.
Wow.
And then turned it around and captured his captor and got an award for it. And I'm sorry, I don't remember what ribbon or medal it is. He got something special from France.
Wow.
Then we have four of our six children that went in. And so Shannon Kroger, our daughter, went into the Navy first. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, her sister Erin Benson Evelyn said, "If Jenny can do it, I can do it too." And she went into the Navy. And then a few years later, and after 9/11, one son of the six kids said, "If I can survive my sisters, I can do anything." And he went into the Marines, subsequently serving at the pleasure of the president and at multiple overseas assignments in combat areas.
Mm-hmm.
Following him was his baby sister, who Kathleen Elizabeth Bass, and she went into the Air Force, served her 4 years then, also overseas. And I'm not sure I mentioned our son's name. That would be Robert Thomas Bass.
Ah, and you have some grandkids or nieces and nephews too, right?
Yes, we do. Oh my gosh. So I'm also not just military wife and military mom, which enough gray hairs on my head, military grandma. Because our daughter Colleen's eldest, Sean Ortiz, went into the Army and just finished his first enlistment and is out now using a GI Bill.
Well, there you go. So I knew I would not keep all of that straight. and I wanted to mention, to tell our listeners, we're doing this interview by phone because, of course, we're in a pandemic, but also you live on the almost in the left coast. And I wanted also to let our listeners know that if I start coughing, it's because we're getting all the smoke from the wildfires down there in Arizona, 500 miles away into New Mexico today. So we're looking out at like haze. So forgive me for sneezing, coughing, or otherwise. But I wanted also to say that, you know, that's a lot of people serving. But your husband, even after he retired from the Air Force, he went off to work for the VA Central Office in Washington, D.C., continuing his service with the Department of Veterans Affairs. So, I mean, your family just keeps serving.
Yes, and in fact, one of the first jobs he had when he retired out was as the senior aerospace science instructor for junior ROTC. So he was back in uniform taking schooling high school kids, and I was with his major, which was pretty cool because we actually married after he was finished with his active duty.
Ah, well, I just interviewed somebody else that was a JROTC instructor, and he said it was like a soft transition. You didn't go cold turkey getting out of the military.
Correct, and Jim's last assignment in the Air Force was as a senior Air Force ROTC instructor at the University of Texas. So it was there was one job in between when he first got out, and then ROTC, and it was a nice transition. And from there, he went right to the Department of Veterans Affairs and worked with the Secretary Principi at the time. And still, you know, fighting for veterans' benefits and education.
Mm-hmm. So all of this service that your family has done, generations, I didn't even know about, you know, I just knew about your immediate family. I didn't know about your father and father-in-law. So how has that shaped your philosophy of family life or raising kids?
Well, we're definitely a family of service. We have multiple cousins and siblings that also serve. So it really, we have everything covered for the Coast Guard. It's pretty amazing. And I was the one who served at home, but not in the military, in the medical profession as a nurse. Mm-hmm. So all of us have a, you know, commitment and dedication to service. And, you know, we live a Christian lifestyle, mm-hmm. which is important as well for that sense of service and being helpful. So, you know, our kids were raised with the idea of there was no option other than to become an active citizen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you and I actually met in 1996 when I took a job at the Catholic school right outside of the Indian Head Naval base there, and we immediately clicked because we were both military spouses and had lots in common. We were only there for a couple of years. You had already settled, but, you know, we immediately bonded, and I know part of it is because I looked like a deer in the headlights, you know, I mean, just started in the middle of a school year. But, you know, we both liked reading and talking about metaphysics and religion and stuff like that. And, you know, even decades later, I still remember some of our in-depth conversations about life after death and what books were good. And, you know, some of the projects you were working on, you were working on something to send up into outer space, if I remember correctly.
Right before we had come out there, I had done a faith community nurse training, some, you know, holistic training and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I actually completed it later in 2005, but there was a challenge with some of the Catholic schools specifically embracing the space program and comfortably integrating it. Mm-hmm. So I did some work, contacted the Space Foundation, and they helped me out with some resources. Mm-hmm. And I created a small resource book for Catholic school educators to help them more easily integrate space concepts while keeping Christ in the classroom. And in fact, if I remember correctly, you are the recognized author,
I did some drawings for it. I think I had already moved again. We'd already PCS'd, but yeah. And then there was something else that went along with that. You did something with a poster in space or something.
Right. We were able to submit an application to the Space Foundation. They were having a competition to get student signatures in space.
Mm-hmm.
And we were awarded that opportunity, so the little tiny Catholic school in Southern Maryland, St. Mary's Star of the Sea, had the opportunity to have its students sign a poster that was taken to the International Space Center and then brought back, and still has it somewhere in its archives.
Well, that's so cool. That's so cool. So we managed to stay in touch ever since 1999. That's something I can't say I've done with many people through all our military moves, but I definitely kept in touch with you. And so I wanted to say that, you know, last year, I think it was last year, my husband and I went out to Nellis Air Base, you know, and I was at the Thunderbird Museum, and I'm walking around with this young airman. He had just gotten accepted into the Thunderbirds, and so part of his training was to take people on tours of the museum. And I was texting you saying, because I knew Jim had somehow been involved with the Thunderbirds. I wasn't sure what, but, you know, hey, Liz, I'm at the Thunderbird Museum, ha, 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 you know. And then you said, you texted me right back, and you said, go look at the wall over on the left side towards the this, and or whatever, the right side. You know, you just pointed me to the wall. So here's this airman. I'm in the middle of texting you, and I'm walking over to the wall, and there was Jim's picture. And he was with the Thunderbirds, and the airman who was with me was like impressed that I knew one of the Thunderbirds.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They redid the museum not long ago, and you were here right before we moved back to the area. But it has been really nice over the years, because Jim serving on the Thunderbirds, it was 86 to 88, mm-hmm. and they had such an amazing team, and all of the officers have stayed in touch routinely, being supportive when there's, you know, medical issues or weddings and Zoom meetings, just because, you know, for the past 2.5, nearly 3 decades now, it's just gotten to be a closer and closer group. It's been really, really neat. And, you know, as far as you and I staying in touch, we are definitely kindred spirits, and I think we recognize that at the very beginning.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, you know, I know part of the training of this young airman was he had to learn all the Thunderbird history and all the culture, and so I imagine that as he goes up the ranks, he had to do all these jobs too. I don't know what his jobs were. He's going to be part of that close-knit family, because it did seem like he knew everybody. You know, it's kind of like he knew everybody's history, and he told me which planes were used, and it was very cool. The museum is a must go see for anybody who's over in Nellis. But I guess we can call them kids, even though they're adults.
A lot of people are kids to us now.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, when you get to be a certain age. But this young guy, he knew so much, and he was so reverent. It was a pleasure doing, you know, to go do the tour with him. So he was definitely part of the family. And I want to segue back to you and your personal family. So what was the best thing about being a military family? And you can think about either from a mom perspective or from a spouse perspective or even a grandma perspective. And then what is the hardest thing about being a military family?
Okay, well, the hardest is definitely the easiest. I guess the best is probably the pride that I have for the sacrifice and service that my husband and children and grandson have made. Mm-hmm. And that's not to make light of the community and life service that our other kids have made that were not military, because mm-hmm. they're equally active citizens and awesome people, mm-hmm. but specifically related to the service, when one puts oneself in a commitment like that, mm-hmm. where sacrifice physically, mentally, emotionally, I mean, pick a feature, probably going to be required. Mm-hmm. It's tough as a mom to It's like heartbreakingly proud to see, look at these awesome people, and then it's really difficult to know the difficult circumstances they put themselves in. And just, you know, the first thing that comes to mind very specifically with that is the day Bobby finished his 9 years active duty as a Marine, mm-hmm. and he called and said, "Okay, Mom, that's it." He had sent me a picture, and we chatted back and forth, and mm-hmm. and when we hung up, I had a cathartic cry, mm-hmm. surprised the heck out of me. And when I was finished, I thought to myself, "My God, I feel like I've been holding my breath the entire time because of the different types of assignments and responsibilities he had during his times in combat."
Right.
And I didn't realize, which I think is important for other spouses and moms to give themselves a little slack, that you really are, you know, holding it together, and you don't realize just how much that is a part of you, mm-hmm. until it isn't.
Right.
Well, you know, it was just very surprising.
Well, and he had, like, multiple deployments, 4 or 5, I don't know how many, but I was with you on some of them. In my head, I would be checking the news, and, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to say, oh, so what was the best? We didn't get around to the best.
So,
well, we did.
The best,
you said pride.
I think is the pride they took in themselves, mm-hmm. having accomplished basic training, mm-hmm. their tech schools, mm-hmm. and the different worldview they brought back mm-hmm. from each experience they mm-hmm. each had. And they were not all positive. I mean, the three girls all experienced what should not be happening at this day and age as far as the impact of women in the military and how men mm. deal with them. Mm. But, you know, that said, they all came back with a very impressive perspective.
Yeah, yeah. One of the I asked a soldier not too long ago, you know, what was a good thing that he took from each of his combat deployments. You know, he'd been multiple places too, and he raved about the country, the landscape, how beautiful it was, and how nice the people were. He said when they weren't shooting at us, you know, it was really we got to meet some really wonderful people. And I thought that was an interesting answer. That's not what I had expected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did take the positives out of every experience. And, you know, the negatives are still there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And sometimes close to the surface and sometimes not so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to just back up a little bit prior to your younger set of kids going off to the military. While we were still living in Indian Head, I remember one Easter we got together, our family and yours at your house. And, you know, I think our youngest, like Katie and Ian, were like in the fourth or fifth grade, you know, very small. Well, not that small, but they were small. And our two oldest, you know, were in high school. And we were hiding eggs and candy for the kids to have a little Easter egg hunt. And you told me to let the little ones go first. And I was like, well, just let them all go. And you're like, nope, trust me. And so, you know, the two little ones went off and they got their eggs and candies. It was all really nice. And then you said, okay, boys, to the big ones. And they commenced to conduct the most violent Easter egg hunt I had ever seen. I will say Bobby instigated it because my kid would never have done that, but they were tackling each other and throwing each other in bushes, and when they finally called it quits, they were just bloody and scratched. I don't even know if they found eggs, but
they were so happy.
They were so happy. This was foreshadowing that Bobby was going to become a Marine and Eric was going to join the Army, but we didn't know it at the time.
Right? If only we saw the clues.
Yeah, exactly. But there they were, combat Easter egg hunt.
That was fun.
Yeah. So you alluded to it a little bit, and I know, you know, Eric, mine went to Iraq for a combat tour, and that was hard enough, but Bobby had so many deployments, and some of your others were all overseas. How did you cope with that, and especially if the tours overlapped? I mean, you've got, like, multiple kids in multiple harm's way places.
Yeah, well, the first approach I took was stay as informed as possible, mm-hmm. which it didn't take long for me to figure out was not the best way to go.
Okay.
Because a lot of the information that you could glean from either Facebook support sites, other support sites that were set up, mm-hmm. You know, letters from the ombudsman for the Navy and mm-hmm. Navy folks too, it didn't work. It didn't help very much, because a lot of people were expressing opinions or what they think they heard, what somebody told them, and mm-hmm. then you get nervous, and then you get, you know, anxious instead of just, you know, keep it straight and level. I have a very strong intuitive sense, and as long as I didn't have a really strong sense something was bad wrong, I was fairly positive it wasn't, and my children were okay, mm-hmm. maybe not happy, but okay with what was happening.
Right.
So eventually I started to go back to those sites to help the new people and young wives and moms of their first time doing it, to say, just take everything with a grain of salt. Don't read everybody's comments. Look for the official messages. They're going to tell us what we need to know. It's not always on time. The times they tell us don't always work out, but mm-hmm. it's okay.
Right.
Because they're doing their best, and it's good. And then to get them involved, I guess, and a lot of it was, okay, these things are okay to send. So if you're going to be active, you feel like you're doing something, it makes it easier to deal with. So we would put together lists of things that young moms or young wives or even the rest of us that were not as young could do within our community to raise awareness, to get support. We did, you know, send Christmas cards to work with you or to school with your kids. The classroom would all sign to a soldier, to a Marine, to an airman, you know, Merry Christmas, we love you, we're thinking about you. And then we'd send candy canes to them and send cases of them to mm-hmm. whoever needed them. Mm-hmm. You know, you used book collection. You would get, you know, the frustrating thing was, you know, they didn't always have the basic needs, but, you know, they had the needs to protect themselves, but not the creature comforts sometimes, like deodorant and socks. So, right. You know, you send over what you can, and that wasn't just for the males. That was for the women as well. They didn't always have the creature comforts, you know?
Yeah.
So it did help with all of us that were here to be supportive, to feel engaged and do whatever little part we could, whether it was writing every day or doing a, you know, an awareness campaign and collecting stuff to send over. It felt like you still kept connected. And I can remember, so one thing, I know you guys had PCS already, but the first time Congress had decided they were going to just, you know, close down, budget didn't go through, we're closing the government, the military isn't going to get paid. Mm-hmm. Well, I had two of my kids were overseas at the time in countries where they were not in, let's say, office jobs.
Right.
And so I got a few people together, and we had posters printed up, and we were heading up to Congress with our posters to say, you have to pay the people that are overseas, active duty, in combat areas, because they can't be worried that the electric back home is going to be turned off. They can't afford diapers, or their, you know, significant other is having a meltdown because they can't do it without the little bit of money they get, you know? Mm. The priorities were so skewed. So, again, feeling involved and advocating, it really helps.
So I'm very curious now. Did you actually get to go into Congress and meet Congress, or did you just have like a big protest outside of the Capitol building?
We got permission to go into the office buildings to meet with the senators and representatives, mm-hmm. but we didn't because the day before they approved paying the military.
Okay, well, see, they were afraid of a bunch of military moms coming up there and causing ruckus. So what I guess I'm hearing you say, is for new military moms or military spouses to get involved, educate themselves, but take the message boards with a grain of salt. But in the case of, you know, not paying them because they were shutting down the government and furloughing people, be involved. So be informed in a good way. Be engaged. You know, make yourself busy and useful by sending packages, writing letters, supporting each other.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I hear a lot of military spouses say that that's what they miss the most when they leave. You know, when their families retire from the military, you know, they miss that camaraderie and that, you know, just like the guy, you know, just like the guys and gals that are actually serving, you know, they miss that camaraderie of the spouses.
Right.
Yeah.
There's still ways, though, to get together on things like that. One of the groups that I'm just started to be active with is Military Veterans Advocacy.
Uh-huh.
And that's a 501c3, and their three pillars are litigation, advocating for veterans and their benefits, and educating veterans on their benefits, and educating attorneys on how to fight for veterans' benefits. Because, you know, even so, this is a little bit of a sidebar, but it's still related to veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So an article was written on the 6th of June this year, mm-hmm. And it was posted in the American Thinker. It was "Veterans Are America's Modern Martyrs." And they said that the concept of service and sacrifice is not respected nor properly understood in today's self-focused, inflated egos, selfie culture. And to prove their point, they cited that among still pending bills in the government, that one of them is for the VA to expand eligibility to World War II veterans for hospital care and nursing home care. So my interest in working with them is because of herbicides and Agent Orange used during the Vietnam War. And it's no wonder the Vietnam-era veterans are still waiting. It's only 40 years where World War II veterans, you know, they've been on 60 years.
Right.
And there's still so many veterans that need to know they're eligible. I mean, first off, okay, let's get down to the basics. People who serve in the military, who don't retire out, are not always aware that they are veterans. And not as much the people in the past 10 or 15 years, but the people before then. Just because they served 3 or 4 years, 4 years, 6 years, they don't always recognize that they are veterans and have veterans benefits available to them. And that was one of the main premises that was trying to be driven home when Jim worked for the VA. But that's still the case. People don't realize there are benefits available to them.
Right.
And then, you know, people need to actually fight for benefits that aren't being allocated properly. You know?
Right. Well, and some of them don't know what the eligibility criteria are either. And so the more education you can get out there, I think is better. We have a collaborative here. The museum has a veteran and family collaborative out here, and we're trying to do a lot of outreach to rural veterans about the same thing, educating on benefits, you know, offering interesting lectures and speakers for them to, you know, and to offering support to caregivers. So, see, we're still symbiotic here.
Yeah. Well, you know, just, and you know this as a female and a matriarch of the family and spouse and mom, and women often lead the healthcare decisions.
Mm.
So, you know, either seeking out care, looking it up, checking it out. So the military spouses can still find camaraderie in some of those kinds of organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I want to shift gears because we have a lot more to cover and it's fascinating. So we already know that you're a nurse and you were a teacher and you taught at a college also.
Right.
But they don't know that you're an inventor and an entrepreneur. So I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about your invention. I'm so proud of this, and I had nothing to do with it.
Thank you. So it was a matter of service. A colleague and I recognized that in order to properly provide opportunities to practice certain skills, EMS students, nursing students, doctor students, I mean, pick a feature, lobotomy, radiology. It used to be when I was trained way back in the day, you could practice on each other, or you practice on an RN, or there might have been a rock hard fake arm, because it was a long time ago. Now, there's different types of simulation products that are very realistic. I mean, some mannequins, you know, cry, sweat, they have different heart rhythms and everything. And so it's easy to practice safe skills that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the one skill that is lacking in many people in the world today is communication. And the problem was noted in an exercise where a student performed the checklist of tasks perfectly, but did not communicate what was being done to the pretend actor patient. And so we recognized that they needed more practice on people, but it had to be safe because you don't want to be sticking people with needles. And what we were practicing was how to draw blood and insert an IV, which almost everybody has done at one time or another. And so we developed something. I was an engineer before a nurse, but had, you know, a lot of things going on up in the head, like left brain, right brain. Sketched it out, and my colleague and I got it patented, and with a team of folks, it's now sold in 14 different countries.
So what is it? It's an arm thing that an actual person puts on so that they can...
So, you know, like shin guards for your kids when they play soccer? It's along those lines, but sleeker, smaller, thinner. It's got simulated skin on it, and it straps on to an upper arm or onto, you know, like from above the elbow to below, or from the upper arm down to the hand. It allows the safe practice of people to start the IV or draw blood there. We have pretend vessels that are inside that have, you know, simulated blood, and the feel of going through the skin and the vessel is very similar to the real person. And we actually expanded it. We have that for animals as well, for veterinary training.
Horses
and dogs and cats and cows and sheep and goats. I mean, pick a feature.
So I have a question. Now my mind has just boggled. I have like 75 things I want to say at this point, but I'm going to ask you one. So how does the actor person who's wearing the simulated sleeve know when to scream, ouch? Is there?
Well, they're actually wearing it so they see when the needle goes in, but we give them a little script, you know, and sometimes we tell them, pretend you're really afraid of needles. Other times it could be you don't understand what they're saying. They're not speaking clearly, loudly. Or you know they didn't, like, you're supposed to say their name. You're supposed to say what's going to happen. If you know they've missed that, call them on it. What did you say your name was? And then, you know. And so besides being safe practice with the needle, it also records the interaction. So the student can put it up on their app and actually hear how they sounded with this actor patient. And most people train to do things exactly right. I mean, we all know what, if you know you're going to be tested on something and you know a skill's important, you practice, and it's good practicing the right way. And then when you go to do it on somebody, you know how you practiced it, so that's how you think you did it. And when people hear themselves, it is the perhaps best learning opportunity for them. Because it's not me saying, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say XYZ. No, they're like, oh my gosh, that's what I sound like, you know? So it really helps for empathy, for situational awareness. These things can be used in all environments. We have them being used, a FEMA group that trains FEMA professionals for search and rescue, urban and other, use it when they put people out in the mountains or under a collapsed building. So people have to actually do the skill in the environment, not just, I can do this in a lab where there's no lights, there's no smoke, there's no screaming, there's no anything.
That's cool. And how does it work with animals?
So with the animals, a lot of folks, they usually train on live animals. And so some people would prefer to practice safely with something before sticking a very expensive horse, let's say, with a needle that could cause damage, because those are, you know, those investments. So the University of Missouri did a study that was published end of last year, or maybe, no, it was beginning of this year, I think, where they used our product for their veterinary students, their third and fourth year students, used them on horses, and they found that the students that practiced on a live horse with this protecting the horse before they stuck the horse for real had a significantly higher and faster success rate.
Wow. That's cool. So what is the name of this product?
For the people, it's Real Life Sim, and for the animals, it's Vet Real Life Sim.
Like Real Life, L-I-F-E?
Yep.
Okay. And so I'm sure there's a website out there like reallifesim.com and all that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Just add a .com at the end.
Okay. Hey, so it's one thing to think up an idea like you just did, but it's a whole nother one to actually build and design it and get people to buy it. And how did that work? I mean, so you have this great idea, and now what?
Yeah, that was my question. We have this great idea, now what? Well, we learned very quickly that you have to prove that it's going to work. It can't just be, well, we use it, we need it, so we know it's fine. Mm. So a patent attorney entered us into a Shark Tank kind of competition, mm-hmm. and said, you know, this will help you decide if you really want to do this and learn more of what it's going to take to make it successful. And we said, all right. So we filled out the application, and we were very happy when we made it to the first cut of 100. Mm-hmm. Then we made it to the next cut of 60. Then we made it to the top 15, and we had to fill out paperwork, and honestly, I didn't understand what they were asking me to give them. They said, what is your burn rate going to be? And Linda and I looked at each other, clearly thinking, well, they don't mean first, second, or third degree burns, which is what we go to. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn about that. They wanted a pitch deck, didn't know what that was, took a class in business, marketing, and entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Knocked that out very quickly, filled out the paperwork, made it to the top 10, were invited to the competition, got there, set up. We're medical professional people. We got a poster made up like you would normally do to mm-hmm. show people in your profession, your study, your findings, your presentation. Uh-huh. And so we bring this, you know, we have our codes, we've got the poster and some mints, you know, be nice. Mm. And we're in the room with the 9 other people, and there's people who are doing stem cell research, we've got apps and trick technology things, and we're literally looking so thinking, what in the world are we doing here?
Yeah.
So we did our pitch, it was fine. And as it turns out, we were awarded first place.
Wow.
not because of our business sense, but because of the presentation of the user designed it the way it needed to be used. And it showed the size of the market that would benefit from it, because basically it helps provide patient safety and better patient outcomes. And so that's the bottom line, is everybody wants to not have bruises when they get stuck with blood. Not have bruises when somebody's trying to put an IV in them. And if you can have people going in with confidence and competence to do it quickly, then your patient gets treated faster, which provides better results faster.
So was it like that TV show Shark Tank? You're standing up in front of a panel of people and they're...
Yeah, just like that, but it wasn't on TV. It was a smaller scale. There were 5 judges. There was a bunch of press behind them. And you went in one at a time, one person spoke, the rest of your team could be supported when the question and answer time came.
Wow.
It was a real experience, I'll tell you.
I
ever thought I'd be doing.
Because I like to watch Shark Tank sometimes on the TV, and I think they're you know, I think they're horrible. They're asking these questions, and I know I would choke and freeze and... you know, and then they ask you, do you want 5% of this or 10%? I'm like, I have no clue, you know.
Yeah, it was really something.
So it's out there in, you said 14 countries?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, I am so excited about that. So people can go learn about it from reallifesim.com. And what was the other one? Animal Real Life Sim?
No, vet, like veterinary. Real Life Sim, they'll give you a link to go to the animal section.
Okay, so vet, like reallifesim.com. Okay, cool. So what's next for you? Any other inventions in the pipeline, or are you just retired?
No more inventions for me. One experience with entrepreneurship and inventing and patenting and all that is good for me. I'm getting more involved again. We just came back here to the Nellis area a year ago to be closer to family and the grandkids and all that. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting more involved with advocacy for the military, mm-hmm. And veterans, because Jim has Agent Orange or herbicide exposure complications. Mm-hmm. As many, if not all, of the people that we've been able to contact that he worked with have. Mm-hmm. And we are going for a third appeal for his disability packet because he is still at 0% and with multiple medical issues now. Resulting in, and we are in the presumptive list, it's just that we have to prove he was exposed.
Right.
So
wow.
That's not as easy as you might think, and there's a lot of people that are not, you know, masters, educated, list people, professionals, that are trying to do the same process. So I'm using my nursing and educator background to try to make sure that everybody has an equal shot to get what they've earned and what they deserve.
Right. I know right now, especially with like burn pit registry and the Gulf fires in Kuwait, you know, a lot of our younger veterans or the OEF, OIF are, you know, presumptive some of this sleep apnea and some of that stuff. So are you also advocating for those guys and gals too?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We're trying to get a rhythm going of how to successfully navigate the requirements to have your concerns heard and to get the benefits that are rightfully yours for all of them. I mean, you know, the OIF, OEF, that's all four of mine that were in. So it is not something just for Agent Orange, but the processes are the same because they all go through the VA.
Right, right. So what was the name of that advocacy group you're working with again? And is it national or is it only in Las Vegas or Nevada?
No, pardon me. I guess the smoke's coming through to me. Sorry. It's the Military Veterans Advocacy, LLC. It is a national program. And John Wells is one of the administrators, leaders of the program. And he's the one who fought so hard and eventually succeeded to get the veterans' benefits for herbicide and Agent Orange exposure for the Blue Water veterans.
Okay.
So that was a long fight, a long time coming, but they finally started getting some of that and got the approval. So.
Right. Well, that was a big deal. That was a big deal.
It was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots and lots of votes. So we just really, you know, are working with, it's all volunteer, you know, and it's just, if you have a skill that could potentially help increase awareness, you know, in any shape or form, it's valuable. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, hopefully our listeners, some listeners that hear this podcast will, you know, take advantage of, you know, the learning about the website, maybe call their local chapter of the Military Veterans Advocacy Group, or, you know, conversely, they could go to their disabled American veterans, their American Legion. There are so many advocates out there helping veterans get educated and get plugged into the system.
Right.
Yeah. Well, listen.
Veterans service organizations are an extremely valuable yet underutilized tool by many.
Right, right. Well, I know that our VA here has some of the representatives from some of those service organizations right in the VA hospital, so people literally can just go in and they're there, you know, three or four times a week, if not more. You can just walk in and, you know, sit down, bring your DD-214, and they'll help. But
Right. But
a lot of times, you know, you need to bring your medical records and all that. But a lot of times, you know, I always encourage the younger veterans to actually join one of the groups, even though it seems like it's mostly older veterans. There's a lot of institutional knowledge. There's a lot of camaraderie. There's a lot of advice. And some of these younger veterans just getting out aren't sure. What do they need to do? And they should all be going and getting signed up at the VA, you know.
Right. And a lot of this stuff is on Facebook.
Yeah.
You could just search Facebook for a veterans service organization or military veterans, and there are going to be lists of different pages that you can pick and choose the way you feel your interests and gifts lie.
Right. One thing I wanted to say is, thinking back to military parents, There is something called Blue Star Mothers. That's a national organization that has chapters in many, many locations. I know in New Mexico we have a couple chapters. Military parents, it's not just mothers, even though the name says mothers. You can get a wealth of support and information by joining a local chapter. They're plugged into a lot of the benefits and help with the troops and things like that. So there's a lot of support out there and a lot of people who have been doing things for a long time that know where to, tell you where to go, get some information if you need it. So you're not alone out there, military parents.
Right, and I actually benefited from the Blue Star Mothers organization. I learned a lot from them. Mm. And the last thing I'll say about the organization, Kiersey, is we don't need anyone to make another new one as much as we need the ones that exist to be utilized to their best capacity.
Right. So I just wanted to ask you in the next couple of minutes, is there anything else you want our listeners to know about anything do you know the story about your father, was it, in World War II?
My father-in-law, he was amazing. The stories he would tell, it's unfortunate that it's been 18 years now that he's passed already, so we didn't benefit from as many stories as perhaps we could have, because World War II veterans, they weren't real keen on talking about it or sharing anything that happened for the most part. And it just toward the end he shared the story, and we all sat there shocked because we were so unaware that either the day or two after he ended, and I may not have the details exactly correct, he and a couple of other very young soldiers got, they were all 18, got separated by a little distance, and they stumbled upon a couple of same age Nazi soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had the jump on them, though, so they took them prisoner, but they never had the opportunity to hand them over because, as my father-in-law tells it, the Americans were talking about, look, we're in this now, it's going to be over, we have so much to live for, all of us at this age, and I guess the Germans understood enough of it that they, over the course of the next 24 hours or so, they turned it around, and the German kids, soldiers, became the Americans' prisoners so they could leave the area and get out of the war.
So that's interesting. That's very interesting.
So that was very, very interesting the way he told it. He's like, I don't want to say I was a POW, but I actually was. Wow.
Yeah, see, and that's that greatest generation, and they just don't talk. They did their job in the military and they came home, and it's decades later you found out that they had a Purple Heart or a Bronze Star or a Silver Star.
And even with Jim during the Vietnam era, he's now, as we're reconnecting with people he served with, he's remembering things and telling stories that none of us had heard before.
Well, the Vietnam vets, they had a different experience coming home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Well, so we keep recognizing and celebrating our family as they've been. And, I've got to say, when someone serves and they complete their service, use your GI Bill. Use it to the best you can. Learn a trade. Use it vocationally. Get a degree. But, do what you think you'd be good at and you'd like, because every one of our kids and Jim and now our grandson has really made positive steps forward by using their GI benefit.
Yeah, and now some of them are transferable to the kids, right? I mean, that's an amazing benefit right there.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Liz, we need to wrap it up. It's been a nice, wonderful talk of almost an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk all night. I just wanted to tell our listeners that our podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Federal Credit Union, as well as organizations such as Military Brats Registry and Military Brats Seal. And I wanted to thank my friend Liz for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Dirce. It's so nice to chat with you, and I hope that anything I've learned may help someone just getting into the system of, you know, being the support person.
Well, no, I think there's been some great information, different groups. I will post the link to Military Veterans Advocacy Group on the bottom of the podcast, and definitely we'll try to get the word out. And also, I'll put on the link to your SIM product, the real life SIM. Yeah. All right, Liz. Well, it's been great, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.